All right, Shabbos, say good morning. Good morning. A beautiful daf ahead of us today. Today's daf is Kuf Chaf Gimel 123. I want to begin by thanking our sponsors, to thank our Week of Learning sponsors, Steve and Terry Zinn, for dedicating all of the shiurim this week in memory of Steve's mother, Doris Devora Bas Yisrael Yoel, with Hakaras Atov to the entire Kehila for the outpouring of support shown to their family during their time of need. Week of Learning dedicated by Aaron and Alana Weinberg in gratitude to Hashem for Yonatan Shai Weinberg's complete refuah 9 years ago. Week of Learning sponsor Dr. Gabriel and Florence Gorel in commemoration of the yard site of Florence's mother, Esther Schwimmer, Esther Bas Avri Ezri Zelig, Zichron Livracha, the Gayson family, in memory of Dr. Alan Gayson, Elio Ben Menachem Mendel HaKohen, in commemoration of his first yard site, and today's Shir, dedicated by Richard and Sharon Buck, in honor of the Hanachas Tefillin of their son, Avi Noam, a Mazel Tov to the Buck Mishpacha, an incredible milestone. You could join Avi Noam and the rest of the Mishpacha at the Shul in the tents at 7 o'clock a.m. for this special milestone. And they also want to thank Greg and Rachel Levitan for dedicating the daf this morning in honor of the birth, Baruch Hashem, of our granddaughter to our children, Shani and Yosef Bizwadi, Neschus of the Torah, Miras Hashem. Her parents, Shabbi Zocha, Legat, LeTorah, LeChuppah, Ulemaisim Tovim. Let's say we thank all of our sponsors. We hope that all the neshamas have an aliyah, all of the families a nechama, and the merits Hashem, all of us should have nachas from our children and our grandchildren. And I will say with that, let us begin. So we'll say, so today's daf is Kuf Chaf Gimel 123, and we are picking up on Kuf Chaf Beis 122 at the two dots. It is 3, 6, 8 lines up from the bottom. So says the Gemara, Amra Yehuda. I'm sorry, no to Adam Kornos. Remember again, the Mishnah said, so we'll say the Mishnah introduced us to the concept of a kli shemalachto le'iser, which is a utensil. Again, the truth is we've seen this before, but this is the primary topic over here. The concept of if you have a utensil, primary use is prohibited in nature. So the simplest example of this would be a hammer, right? So again, we're going to discuss in greater depth the parameters of this halacha, but a hammer is primarily used for building. Building, of course, is going to be usur on Shabbos. Usur on Shabbos. So halacha l'maisa, the Mishnah said that if you want to go ahead and use the hammer to go ahead and crack open nuts, right, then that will be permitted on Shabbos. It says the Gemara, Amar Rav Yehuda, and I will say that we're gonna define the parameters of that halacha actually today. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yehuda, corner shall agosim lifto abas agosim. So Rav Yehuda says, when we say you could use a hammer, it means you could use a nut hammer. So I guess, you know, in the days before nutcrackers, so they had nut hammers, a little hammer to crack nuts. So the Gemara says, so Rav Yehuda says, when we say that you could use a hammer to crack nuts, that's a nut hammer. Aval shal nefachin lo. But lemaisa, you cannot use like a blacksmith's hammer, or we'll say, or for that matter, a building hammer to crack nuts. Kasavar, because Rav Yehuda holds, davar shemalachto le'israfilu tzorach gufo aser. Because Rav Yehuda holds, we'll say that if you have a utensil whose primary use is of a prohibited nature on Shabbos, you cannot use that utensil, even what we call it tzorach gufo. We'll say tzorach gufo means the ability to use that utensil in a permitted fashion. So Rav Yehuda holds that a kli shemalachto le'iser, right, a utensil whose primary use is prohibited, for example, a hammer, in this case a blacksmith's hammer, even though you want to use it on Shabbos to crack nuts, which is permitted, there's nothing wrong cracking nuts on Shabbos, halacha l'maisa, Rav Yehuda says you cannot use a blacksmith's hammer for that. Rather, again, you could only use a nut hammer for that. So Rabba says, Elameato, Seifa Diktani Vesha Rechas, Vesha Mazlik Losis Alav Lakatan. Here's the problem with this, Rabba says. The end of the Mishnah says that you could also go ahead and take a winnowing shovel or a pitchfork in order to hand something to a child who is at a distance. So says the Gemara, Bepashtas, these are farming utensils. So the Gemara says, Resech, Reches, Umazleg, Mim, Yachade, Leilakatan. Does someone have a special fruit winnowing shovel or a fruit pitchfork? No, Bepashtas, you're using farming implements, right? Which are technically speaking a kli shemalachto le'iser, a utensil whose primary use is prohibited on Shabbos, and yet the Mishnah says that you can use it in a permitted fashion, in this case, to hand fruit to your child. Ela Amar Rabba, rather Rabba says, Kornos shal nefachim lefatzea boas ha-gozim. Rather Rabba says as follows, the Mishnah is teaching me that I can use a blacksmith's hammer in order to crack nuts. That's the chiddush of the Mishnah, that you could take a utensil, which is a kli shemalach d'leiser, a utensil whose primary use is prohibited on Shabbos, and halacha l'maisa, you can use it in a permitted way. Kasavar Rabba holds top of kufchav gimel, davar shemalach d'leiser letzorech gufo mutter. Because Rabba holds, Rabba said that you could take a davar shemalach d'leiser, a utensil whose primary use is prohibited on Shabbos, and you could use it in a permitted way on Shabbos. Eis ve'abai l'rabo. Sabai posed the question to Rabbo. Meducha. So we'll say meducha is a pestle. Im yesh bo shum metalklinosa. If the meducha, right? If the pestle, right? It's a receptacle in which you grind something in. So ultimately, remember again, the act of grinding is aser on Shabbos. So im yesh shum. If there's garlic inside of the meducha, metalklinosa, then you're permitted to go ahead and carry it. Ve'in lav, but if there's no garlic inside of it, in metalklinosa, you can't carry it. Rabbo say na bepashtos, again, the mortar is a, right, the mortar is a klisha malach dole iser. See, yet what are we saying over here? That halacha l'maisa, if there's food inside of it, you could carry it. But if there's no food inside of it, you can't carry it. Now look at Ash for just a moment. So the Gemara says, "Ve'im lav in metaltlin kigon leishev aleha kevon de'ikar malach to lishchika dehi malachas isra mishum tochin." So we'll say this was interesting. Now again, in the case of let's say a mortar and a pestle, so aloch lamaisa the mortar will say, so meaning you could go ahead and use it as a seat, right? You could use it as a chair. There are other uses for it. Yet we see that halacha lamaisa, you're not allowed to move it on Shabbos unless, of course, there's food inside of it, or for that matter, Yom Tov, unless, of course, there's food inside of it. So lamaisa again, you see that a kli shemalach tole iser cannot be utilized for a permitted purpose on Shabbos. Amalei Rabba says that's not a kasha. Whose opinion does this bracelet reflect? Hamani Rabbi Nechemiah. It's Rabbi Nechemiah. The Amar ain kli nital ella litzorech tashmisho. Rabbi Nechemiah happens to hold that a utensil can only be moved or can only be taken for the sake of its primary purpose. Okay, Shabbos say, Salach lamaisa, there is a different opinion. Rabbi says, listen, but say, you know, klagad in life is to recognize that not everybody's going to agree with you. The moment in life you could accept the fact that not everybody agrees with you, it's a much happier life. So Rabbi says, listen, there's another opinion out there. I'm not the only opinion over here. So Rabbi Nechemiah holds that a utensil cannot be moved except for its primary purpose. And he's the author of that brisa that says that the mortar cannot be moved unless, of course, there's garlic, there's food inside of it. Eisveis, we raise another kasha. Beishamai omrim einotlin es ha'ali lekatsev alav basar. Beishamai says, you can't move the pestle to go ahead and cut meat on it. Ubeisilo matirin. And Beisilo holds that you are permitted. Vishavin shim katsev alav basar. But both agree that what? That halacha lemaisa, once you have used it to cut meat, like as a cutting board on top of it, shasla tatlo, that you are not permitted to go ahead and carry it anymore. Look at Rashi again. The Gemara says, I will say, now this is talking about over here on Yom Tov, it happens to be. So, machlokes yeshar beisilo, can you move the pestle to begin with? Beis Shammai says, no, right? To go ahead and cut meat on it, Beisilo says, yes. But they both agree that once you've used it as a cutting board and you've cut meat on it, that you can no longer go ahead and move it. Look at Rashi. Shasla taltalo. Dahai de kasharu beisilo. Mishum simchas yamtiv kasharu. Because that which beisilo allowed you to move the pestle to cut meat on it was because of simchas yamtiv. Rejoy alma. Mishum de ali malachtolis. So the tishas tragis. The disney. Uklipas eitzim. Labe bahin oros asa. So let's listen to this. So beisilo allows you to go ahead and move the pestle in order to go ahead and cut meat on it because of Simchas Yom Tov. But even Beisilo agrees that once the meat has been cut on the pestle, you are not permitted to move it anymore. Not permitted to move it anymore. Which Abose tells you that even were you to find some permitted use for the pestle, you would not be permitted to move it on Yom Tov. So what do you see from this? Remember, there's a Kashan Rabbah. Rabbah, you said that a Kli Shemalach Tol Le'Isser, a utensil whose primary use is prohibited on Shabbos and or Yom Tov, because there's a concept of a muktzah on Yom Tov as well, halacha l'maisa can be moved for a permitted purpose. Yet here we clearly see that that's not the case. Sarvel Shemi is to which Rabba said, Sarvel Shemi Kerab Nechemia. So Rabba wanted to once again say, oh, it must be that the author of this particular braisa once again is Rabbi Nechemia. Rabbi Nechemia has a much more restrictive view. Rabbi Nechemia holds that a utensil can only be moved for the purposes of its primary use. Kevan d'shama l'hada amrav chinana bar shamya mishmei d'rav hakomodin b'sichi zayri umizuri. Everyone agrees about the sichi are spindles, zayri are like clothespins, and mizuri are hammers or mallets. The chivan the kapit alayhu, since people will say in general are makbit on these items. In other words, either because they were expensive or because they had specialized uses, therefore people are makbit to only use it for its designated purpose. Miyachid luhu makum. People designate a specific space for these items, and because they are given their own specific space, therefore what? Halacha l'maaseh they're muktzan Shabbos. Hachinami, so too over here, by the pestle, miyachid luhu makum, a person goes ahead and sets it aside in a place for it to be kept, and because it's set aside in a particular place, therefore by definition it's set aside for non-use. And because it's set aside for non-use, therefore halacha l'maisa, it is mukza. Itmar, Rabbi Chiya Baraba, Amram Yochanan, I'm supposed to say, therefore again, we're still at the machlokas. We've got Rabba telling us that a kli shemalachto le'iser, a utensil whose primary use is prohibited on Shabbos, can be moved l'tzorech gufo. You can use it for a permitted purpose on Shabbos. Rabbi Nechemia telling us that a utensil can only be used on Shabbos for its primary purpose. So if its primary purpose is a permitted one for Shabbos, then you could use the utensil. But if the primary purpose is not permitted for Shabbos use, then halacha l'maaseh, you can't use it on Shabbos. Itmar, Rabbi Chevar Abba Am Rabbi Yochanan, Kurnus shel zahavim shaninu. Supposed to now let's go back to the Mishnah. Remember how this whole discussion started? Here's what the Mishnah told me. The Mishnah told me that I could take a hammer and use it to crack open nuts on Shabbos. And I will say, what was the Shabbos the Gemara is dealing with? What kind of hammer? What kind of hammer are we dealing with over here? So remember again, we had a couple of different opinions. Rabbi Yehuda who said, it's a nut hammer. You can use a nut hammer to crack open nuts, but you can't use any other kind of hammer to crack open nuts. That's Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi came along and said, no, it's even a building hammer, right? Or even a blacksmith's hammer, meaning the type of hammer that's used for a prohibited activity, you could still go ahead and utilize that on Shabbos to crack nuts for a permitted purpose. Comes along, Rabbi Yochanan, Kurnu Shal Zahavim Shanim. He says it's even a goldsmith's hammer, right? The goldsmith's hammer, Rabbi Shimon Bar Abba Amar Kurnus Shal Besamim. Even a hammer used for spices. So apparently, they used to use a hammer like to crush up spices and herbs. Man d'amr d'besamim, kol shekin d'zahavim. So we'll say the opinion who said that you could even use a spice hammer, all the more so you could use a gold hammer. Man, because we'll say, again, remember the gold hammer, people were very makbid as to what you used your gold hammer for. Halavai ushal b'zilcha. Right, so we'll say, so remember again, what do you, because remember, if you're hammering out sheets of gold, you need to make sure that your hammer is absolutely smooth. Because if the hammer is not smooth, you could ruin the sheet of gold. So because that, people were makbid not to use their gold hammers for other things. So the opinion who says, yet interestingly enough, the one thing apparently that you would be even more makbid with than your gold hammer was your spice hammer. Because apparently, again, you wouldn't normally use your spice hammer for other things, also because of the smell, meaning you wanted that hammer to be reserved for the use of spices. So the opinion holds that halacha l'maisa, you can go ahead and use it for besamim, the spice hammer, certainly says you could use the gold hammer to crack open the nuts. Man damer shal zahavim, but the opinion says the gold hammer, val de besamim kapit alayu, will say you could use the gold hammer, but you can't use the spice hammer. The spice hammers, everyone knows, people are much more makbid on. Okay, so what's it? So again, there might be some level of discussion in terms of what type of hammer, but it appears that the majority opinion that's coming out now is like Rabba, namely that the lesson, the teaching of the Mishnah, is that you could take a hammer, that would normally be muktzah on Shabbos. Why is it muktzah? It is what's called the kli shmelachto le'iser. It is a utensil whose primary use, is prohibited on Shabbos. Blacksmithing, building, hammering out gold, crushing spices. Yet the Mishnah teaches me that halacha lamaisa, I could use it in a permitted way. In this case, the permitted way being crushing up spices on Shabbos. Beautiful, says the Gemara. I'm sorry. I just forgot to... Okay, so the Gemara says as follows. So remember again, next was Kushin Karkar. So you can go ahead and take a spindle. This was in the Mishnah. Spindle or a weaving rod, litchov bo, in order to spear a piece of fruit. So the Gemara says, Tan Rabbanon, Paga shetamna bitevin, vichara shetamna bichom. So this is an interesting discussion. Paga is like a fig. So if you have a fig that was covered up in straw, or a biscuit, charar is literally a biscuit, like a roll, sheptamna begichalim, that was covered in coals. So we'll say, here's the issue. Both of these items, now again, the fig, of course, is not mukza. The roll is not mukza. The issue is that they're covered in mukza material, right? The straw will be mukza, or the coals will be mukza. But I want to remove the fig, or I want to remove the roll. How do I do that? So if part of the fig or part of the roll is uncovered, therefore I will say, what could I do? I can go ahead and lift up the fig, lift up the roll. Now, what's the novelty in that? You could remove it. What's the novelty? The novelty is that even though I'm going to end up moving the straw, or I'm going to end up moving the coals, it is permitted on Shabbos. Why, says Rashi, what is this called? This is called tiltul min hatzad. So the truth is, what we'll see, this is not even Rashi, this is not even really called tiltul min hatzad. It's like an incidental moving. I'm not really even moving the straw directly. I'm not moving the coals directly. And therefore, that's not a problem. Ve'im lav, but if there is no uncovered part of the fig or no uncovered part of the roll, then I can't remove it on Shabbos. In other words, we'll say, what I'm not allowed to do is move aside the coals or move aside the straw, because at the end of the day, that would be the movement of mukza. Rabbi Lazar ben Tadai says, Toch vin bekush o bekarkar, vehein min ha'arus me'aleim. So Rabbi Lazar has a different approach. He says, spear it, right? Spear the roll or spear the fig with the, again, I'm about to say, with the spindle or with the weaving rod, and pull it out like that. And again, if the straw ends up moving, it doesn't matter to us. Or if the coals end up moving, it doesn't matter to us, since I am not the one who's going ahead and moving it. Amar Rav Nachman, halacha k'Rav Elazar ben Tadoi. So Rav Nachman said the halacha is like Rav Elazar ben Tadoi. That halacha l'maisa, just go ahead and spear it with something and pull the item out. Again, obviously this requires the item to be a little bit revealed so you could find where it is. But l'maisa, the fact that the straw ends up moving or the coals end up moving, that's not considered me moving mukts. Amar Rav Nachman, halacha Rav Elazar ben Tadoi, l'meimra, the Savrav Nachman tiltul min hatzad lo shmei tiltul. And I must remember again, this is what I mentioned before. Even though Rashi says this is not really tiltul min hatzad, the Gemara calls it tiltul. So what's tiltul min hatzad? Incidental movement. So I must say, think about this for just a moment. You have a biscuit, right, that is covered in coals. So now what we're saying over here is spear the biscuit and pull it out. But when you pull it out, you're going to end up moving the coals. That's called tiltul min hatzad. That's called incidental movement. I'm not really moving the coals. I'm moving the roll, which ends up moving the coals. But number one is I'm not moving the coals directly. Number two, that's not really even my intention. Right? My intention is to go ahead and get the roll. Yet how, so Bo says, so is that true that Rav Nachman holds that that's permitted? Vam Rav Nachman, hai pugla. Bo says, so if you have a pugla is a radish. So ultimately, again, Rashi says, Tznon toloshet minabaris viniskala rosha. So let's listen to this interesting case. I have a radish that was detached from the ground, but then I buried it back into the ground. Now watch this. So Amar Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman says as follows. Hai puglo, if you have this radish that's in the dirt, so milamalo lamata shari. So if you pull it out, right? If the bottom of the radish is on top, And the top part of the radish is on the bottom. So milamala lamato. So Rashi says there milamala lamato. Imhaya ha elyon shela lamala. I'm sorry. If the upper part of the radish was on top. So in other words, you put the radish back into the ground, but the top of it is taking out of the earth. So midamala lamata, himaya elyon shalal lamala, vakotzer, and the more narrow part of the radish, the bottom of the radish, is below. Kishu sholfa cholzem elyon shalal, litachton shalal, verochav hatzno lamala, mutter deleker tot lover. So it's very simply. This is what Rav Nachman says is like this. I have a radish that I detached on Erev Shabbos. It's detached. Then I decided to put it back in the dirt. Right? Now I want to go ahead and take it out of the dirt. Now both say, what you're going to see over here is really what happened. It's not that I totally covered it with dirt. It's still the top of it is still exposed. I want to pull it out. Rav Nachman says, you could pull it out essentially as long as you don't end up displacing or moving any dirt. So essentially, if the wide part of the radish is on top, that means when you pull it out, no dirt has to move. On the flip side, if the wider part of the olive is inside, it's lower down, and the narrow part of the olive is on top, then when you pull it out, you'll end up displacing dirt. And Rav Nachman says, you can't do that. So what does that show you? They're both saying, this is another case of, this is indirect movement of mukta, what we call tiltul min hatzad, yet Rav Nachman is saying, you can't do it. So the Gemara says, Hadrabi Rav Nachman le'ahi. Rav Nachman retracted that position. Okay, so apparently Rav Nachman, the way it worked is like this. It used to be that Rav Nachman held tiltul min hatzad, secondary movement of muktza, is asr. That's what he used to hold. But then halacha lemaisi changed his position, and now he holds tiltul min hatzad is mutter. And Rav Nachman, that is indeed how we hold halacha lemaisa, that indirect movement of muktza is mutter on Shabbos. Now, Rav Nachman, to be clear, we only use that concept sparingly and only in certain circumstances. So in certain circumstances where halacha lamaisa, I need something, there's a need, however we define need, and again, let's say there's a mukta item that's sitting on top of the item that I need, there's a way, so halacha sometimes not for the shaking off of the mukta item or just the rolling off of the mukta item, I am moving mukta, that is called tiltul min hatzad, indirect movement. An indirect movement under certain circumstances will be mutter. Beautiful. Machat shayad litol ba. So remember again, the Mishnah said that you could take a needle, a hand needle, and use it to take out splinters. Well, so remember again, once again, a needle is a klisha malachtu le'isser. Right? A needle has a primarily prohibited use. Yet the halacha is, I'm permitted to go ahead and use it to take out a splinter on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, Shalach le Rava b'rei de Rava le Rav Yosef. So Rava, the son of Rabba, sent Rav Yosef, ilan deinu Rabbeinu, Rebbe, teach us. Machad shenita charara o uktzamahu. What happens if you have a needle? And let's say we'll say, so charara literally means the eye. The eye of the needle was removed. Or the point of the needle was removed. So what is the status of such a needle? Amar le tenisua, we learned, Machat shalyad, the middle of the Mishnah say that you could take a needle, right? What we call a hand needle, a needle used for sewing, little basa coats, and you could use in order to take out a splinter. Dechima ichbas le lakot bein ukuva bein shein ukuva. So, what's in order to remove a splinter? What do you need? You don't need an eye. You don't need an eye of the needle. What do you just need? All you need is the point of the needle. So, you see from here that as long as the needle retains its sharp tip, it retains its identity as a needle. Apparently, even if it loses its eye, it could still retain its identity as a needle. So the Gemara says, de kasha, machot charara o ukta. If you have a needle, and you went ahead and you removed the eye of the needle, or you removed the tip of the needle, so tahora, ultimately, again, we'll say the needle is going to be tar. Now we'll say what tar means is what the Gemara, so this is tuma. So the Gemara says over here, or tar, I should say, once you remove the eye or the tip, halacha lemaisa, the needle loses its identity as a kli. And once it loses its identity as a kli, if it did in fact possess tuma, that tuma dissipates. So the Gemara says, so now that would appear to teach me that what? That for Shabbos also. Therefore, once the needle goes ahead and loses its eye or loses its tip, it should no longer be a kli and should be muktzah on Shabbos as well. So Amar Abaye says, Tuma Shabbos karamis? Why are you comparing Tuma and Shabbos? After all, Tuma kli maisa bo'inon. So also remember again, it's different. When it comes to Tumah, so remember again, I both said the laws of Tumah are determined by what is considered to be a Kli Maisa, complete Kli. All right, so everyone will agree that for a needle to be a complete Kli, what does it need? It needs an eye and it needs a tip. And therefore, halacha lemaisa, if it's missing either one of those things, then what? Then it no longer has the identity of a Kli, and therefore, again, is no longer Makabal. And if it was Tameh, now becomes Tar. By Shabbos, I will say, what do you need? Shabbos, midi dichazi ba'inan, vahana michazi ala mishkali bekutz. We'll say, by Shabbos, it's an issue of functionality. Does this item still function, still serve a constructive purpose? And the halacha is that if you have a needle, even if it doesn't have an eye, as long as it still has a tip, halacha lemaisa, again, it functions normally, and therefore, again, can be used on Shabbos. Amar Rava, man de kamosiv, shapir kamosiv. Rava says, no, don't be so dismissive. The question is a good question. Midal inyan tuma lav manahu, leinyan Shabbos nami lav manahu. So we'll say, Rava says, no, there is a connection of Osai. Both for Shabbos and for tuma, really, you need the object to satisfy the criteria of a Kli. And therefore, if you're going to tell me that for Tumah purposes, once the eye or once the tip is removed, it no longer has the identity of a Kli, of a utensil. If that is true for Tumah, then ultimately, again, that should be true for Shabbos as well. If you have a needle, whether it has an eye or doesn't have an eye, Mutlo Talkalo b'Shabbos, you are permitted to go ahead and carry it on Shabbos. As Rabbi says, see, even an eyeless needle on Shabbos still has the identity of a Kli, of a utensil, and therefore can be moved on Shabbos. V'lo Amr Nekuva, and ultimately, again, they only said about a needle without an eye, V'lo Amr Nekuva, Ela Le'inyon Tuma Bilvat. So I say the only time that came up was by Tumah. So apparently, again, the Gemara, this Braisa Bosai is being mechalik, making a distinction between Shabbos and Tumah. In Achinami for Tumah, in order for an object to be makabel Tumah, to retain its Tumah, it must be a completely intact Kli. The definition of a completely intact Kli, ultimately, again, for Tumah purposes or for needle purposes, is both an eye and a tip. Masha Inkin, by Shabbos, halacha lemaisa, all you need is functionality. As long as the needle has a tip, even if it doesn't have an eye, it's still functional. Therefore, it still should be makabel tuma. Tiergama Abaya Liba Durava Bigomi Askinan. So Abaya says, what are we talking about over here? Gomi. So we'll say, interestingly enough, if you look at Rashi, Gomi Machtina Umbos Linakiv, Dinekuva, Nigmara Malachta, Visha'ina Nekuva, Eina Nigmara Malachta. Hilchach le'inyan tumahu delo havikli. So what are we talking about over here? We're talking about a needle that is being fashioned. So I will say there's a distinction the Gemara is making over here between a needle that was already a needle that lost its eye or lost its tip versus a needle that mitchila is being fashioned now. When it's being fashioned now, before you go ahead and you make the eye in the needle, sometimes that eyeless needle would just simply be discarded into the scrap heap. So therefore, again, the Gemara says, "Zimnin demimlach alayu amashvi luhumana." Sometimes, right? If it's not yet fully fashioned needle, so sometimes, ultimately, again, sometimes halacha lemaisa, a person will not pierce it, not make the eye, and just use it as a different type of needle in order to go ahead and take out splinters. But sometimes a person just simply would not use such a utensil. Aval hecha denitl charara. Oh, oops, I'm sorry, I said that wrong. So halacha lemaisa, when you have a needle that has not yet been completed. So when it's not yet been completed, halacha lemaisa, a person may choose not to put the eye in the needle and just simply set this aside as a splinter needle. That's a splinter needle. And a splinter needle does not need an eye, of course, as is understandable. However, aval hecha denitl charara, oh, oops, if a person had an already complete needle, and then that needle lost something, either its eye or its tip, many times Adam Zarka Lebein Grutos. Many times a person will take such a needle and throw it into the scrap heap. So because of throwing it into the scrap heap, therefore it does not have the identity of a Kli. Alright, Asuve Yenuka. So what's an interesting shiloh over here? So let's say Baksha baby was born. When the baby was born as a result of birth, the limbs, you know, were I don't know what the technical term is, but the limbs are out of the joints. So the baby has to be straight, what they call straightening of the baby. So I'll say, interestingly enough, what they used to do in Talmudic times is they would swaddle the baby very tightly with the hope that that would put the limbs back into their joints, back into their sockets. So are you permitted to do this on Shabbos? Can you straighten out the baby on Shabbos? So the Gemara says, Rav Nachman, Asr Rav Nachman says you're not allowed to do so. Rav Nachman, Asr Rashi says, the dummy and the taking. Because Rav said this has the appearance of fixing. Like almost like a makibe patish type of thing. Right? On the flip side, of Shesha Shah, Rav Shesha says that it's mutter. Rav Nachman, I'm Rav Nachman, so Rav Nachman said, Minami, Allah, how do I know that it's Asr to straighten out the baby on Shabbos? This non, because we learned, in Osin Amadez. In Osin, Afik Tvizin B'Shabbos, you cannot go ahead and consume Afik Tvizin. So we'll say, what's Afik Tvizin B'Shabbos? What's Afik Tvizin? If you look at Rashi, Lahaki, Shosem Mashkem Umaki, V'lol Rafua, El Laharik Ismev, Shiucha Lechob L'Shtos Hayom Harbeki, Damirin Aperek Chabbos, V'af Agad Lo Gazor, Mishum Srika Samanam, Daha Lav L'Rafua, He Aster Mishum Demetakin Gavar. We'll say, Afik Tvizin is something a person would drink. Again, I'm sure there's a technical term for it. In order to induce vomiting. So we'll say, interestingly enough, this is actually quite fascinating. This was not done for medicinal purposes. This was done to clear out the insides to be able to eat more. It sounds actually like a shtickle Epicurean over here. Right? So it's quite fascinating. So you would drink this stuff in order to induce vomiting so that you could eat more. So we'll say, Rav Nachman says, you're not allowed to do this on Shabbos. You're not allowed to do this. And I both say, this is not refuah. So ultimately, Rav Nachman says, you can't do this on Shabbos, right? And why can't you do it on Shabbos? Rav Nachman understands because an individual, quote unquote, is fixing themselves. They're being metakin, I want to ready or fix myself to be able to consume more. So you see, you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos. The same way you can't fix yourself by inducing vomiting on Shabbos, you also can't fix the baby whose joints or whose limbs are out of whack. Rav Sheshes, that's not a good comparison. Hasam lavarche, that's not normal, or that's not the normal course of events to induce vomiting, so you can go ahead and eat more. Hacha orche, but here when a baby is born and the limbs are out of their joints, it is normal to swallow the baby, to go ahead and rearrange the limbs, not to rearrange, but to push the limbs back into the sockets. Oh, Rav Sheshes, how do I know that it's mutter to ultimately straighten out the baby on Shabbos? Disnan, machat shal yad litol ba'as hakotz. Interesting, because Rav Sheshe says that halacha l'maisa on Shabbos, you're allowed to use the needle in order to go ahead and take out the splinter. Now, we'll say, now what does that show you? So what's interesting about this, we'll say, is as follows. Rav Sheshe is pointing out that halacha l'maisa, you are permitted to take out a splinter. Now, the fact that you're permitted to take out a splinter means what? That if there's something that causes discomfort, you are permitted to rectify that on Shabbos. So the same way that you're permitted to take out a splinter, you're permitted to straighten out the limbs of the baby on Shabbos. But listen, I just want to point out over here, none of this, interestingly enough, in the eyes of Chazal, was a concern of refuah, was a concern of medicinal healing. Because in these situations, there's not an ailment. There's a discomfort. The splinter is discomfort. So removal of the splinter, interestingly enough, does not fall under the category of medicinal healing. So if Sheshes therefore wants to posit the same way that the removal of a splinter doesn't fall under the category of medicinal healing, but rather again it's just the alleviation of pain, therefore you're permitted to straighten out the limbs of the baby on Shabbos also, because there's no refuah there, it's just the alleviation of discomfort for the child. Rav Nachman says that's not a good comparison. Rav Nachman says, Hasam pakid haha lo pakid. Interestingly enough, he says the difference with he's looking at Rashi. Pakid hakotz aze eno mechubra bo ela mufgad v'nasun sham v'hotza asa eno tikun hacha lo pakid v'dami lemelacha shemisachin umachnisa lemakum chibar. So he says, you know, the splinter is embedded, but it's not part of the body. So because it's embedded in that part of the body, therefore its removal does not resemble tikun, does not resemble fixing. But straightening out of the limbs of the baby, which ultimately, again, is inserting them back into their sockets, that is tikkun. That ultimately represents fixing, And because that's fixing, therefore again, Rav Nachman will say that it's Asur on Shabbos. We'll say it happens to be that halacha l'maisa, that Ram Shulchan Aruch passing is like Rav Sheshes, that it is permitted to straighten out the limbs of a baby on Shabbos, to push them back into their sockets. And ultimately, interestingly enough, it's not an issue of refuah, which is really quite fascinating. It does not fall under the category of the prohibition of medicinal healing. Again, and obviously doesn't pass the threshold of metakin, of like Makke Bepadvish either. Incredible. Says the Mishnah, Kana Shel Zeisin. So we'll say if you have a rod, an olive rod. Now, what would you use an olive rod for? So we'll say, as you're going to see, that rod, again, we're talking about olives that are placed inside of a press. So if you're putting olives in a press, halacha l'maisa, you would go ahead and you would turn over the olives to see if they are ripening or not. And now when I say ripening, remember they're already in the press. Part of pressing olives, I'll say before you actually press them, you would let them sit in the vat together. And olives, which are also going to generate heat, that heat already softens them and allows the olives to begin to emit oil. So what you would do is you would turn over the olives. So that was done with a kana shel zeisim, an olive rod. So kana shel zeisim, im yesh keshe v'rosha mekabel tuma. If it has a knot at the tip of it, it's mekabel tuma. V'im lav, im mekabel tuma. But if it doesn't have a knot on the tip of it, then it's not mekabel tuma. Ben kach u'ben kach nitl b'shabes. And halacha l'maisa, again, whether it has a knot, doesn't have a knot, halacha l'maisa, it can be moved on Shabbos because you could find permitted ways to use such an item. Okay, says the Gemara. Amai, I don't understand. Why is the olive rod makabel tuma? Pshute kliyetsu. Well, remember again, back to l'chos tuma for just a moment, I promise. Remember again, when it comes to l'chos tuma, so there's something called pshute kliyetsu. Pshute kliyetsu means a flat wooden utensil with no receptacle. In general, we assume that a wooden utensil with no receptacle is not makabel tuma. An olive rod, the pashtos, is a flat wooden utensil with no receptacle. If so, why is it mekabel tuma? To which the Gemara says, My time, dumya desak, because we'll say in general, when it comes to tuma, so in order for an object to be mekabel tuma, it has to be comparable to a sack, just like the sack ultimately again has a receptacle, so to the clear eight wooden utensils have to have a receptacle as well. So Tana, Mishved Rab Nechemya, Bishar Shema Hapech, Bezesim Hof Chovaro Abo. So we'll say ultimately again. So because why? Because at the time when you go ahead and you flip over the olives, you literally hofcho, you turn over the olives, veroabo, and you examine the rod. Now what's the pshat? Look at Rashi. Becholo berosho shemishtayir sham aidei shupakor b'keshel. Let's listen to this. There was often a knot at the end of this rod. So interestingly enough, the halacha is. That in that knot, it almost formed like a little bit of a natural cavity. So when you would turn over the olives, you would see there would get some oil stuck in that cavity. So because it has a shtickle cavity, therefore halacha l'maisa, that's called the receptacle. And because this is the receptacle, therefore the olive rod is mekabel tuma. Beautiful. Mishnah, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi says, now here's something very interesting. We're going to get now, it's just quite fascinating how the Gemara is arranged. Because we've spent a lot of time on Muktzah. It's actually, again, I know many of you are probably surprised to see that we're back in Muktzah again. Right? We're now watching the 17th chapter of Shabbos. We've spent, what's fascinating is Muktzah's Drabanan, yet it gets the greatest amount of coverage in the Masechah Shabbos, out of all the Malachas. It's really quite fascinating. Now, in this sugi that we're about to do, we're actually going to see the actual evolution of the concept. It's actually quite riveting. We're going to see the actual evolution. You're going to mamish feel it as if you're living through it. The actual evolution of the halachas of muktzah. So watch this. Rabbi Yossi says, "Kol hakelim nitalim." This is going to blow your mind. Rabbi Yossi says, "The truth is, you could carry anything you want on Shabbos, right?" 99% of utensils are not muktzah Shabbos. This is like mind blowing. With the exception of chutz min amaser hagadol, with the exception ultimately again of a large saw, v'yased shal macharisha. So I'll say yased shal macharisha literally means the coulter of the plow. Now what it actually means, I will say, is a plow, right, has a large sharp blade. It can have more than one blade, but it has at least one blade. That's, remember again, when you pull the plow over the soil, that's that blade that overturns the soil. So Rav Yossi comes along and says, nothing is muktzah on Shabbos except for a large saw and the large blade of a plow. Right? Mind-blowing, no? Mind-blowing. We spent all this time trying to figure out at the end of the day, like, what's muktzah, what's not muktzah. Rabbi Yossi is such a thing. Nothing is muktzah except for these two items. Says the Gemara, what's that analyze? I'm going to go meal. Hai uchla de katsri, ki yaseh chamach ha-resha. So once it comes along, Reb Nachman, and says, uchla de katsri, Ashi says, uchla de katsri, klei nechoshes ha-asui kinnafa, nekavim nekavim, v'ushal kovsim, v'nosno ala begadim, u'mezalif bo mayim. So let's listen to this. This is actually very interesting. So Reb Nachman says, literally a launderer's sieve. So let's say what they would use is, this would be a utensil that had perforations, and when laundering a garment, apparently some garments you didn't want to soak in the water. So instead what you would do is you would pour water through the sieve, and the launderer's sieve would sprinkle water on the utensil. So Rav Nachman says, the launderer's sieve is just like the Yasei Chalmach HaRisha, which is another way of saying, it's muktzah. It's muktzah. Amr Abaye, charva du'ushpachi, du'ushchapi. So literally again, a tanner's knife, or sakina da'ashkafta, Rashi says over, chatzina da'ashkafta is literally a butcher's knife, or the Gemara says, chatzina denagri, ki Yasei Chalmach HaRisha dami. All of these different types of knives, which was essentially were specialty knives, right? Knives that people used in their particular malachas, in their particular forms of work. These knives have the status of the blade of the plow, meaning that just as the blade of the plow, halacha lamaisa, is muktzah, right? And set aside for knives. So I want to say, remember again, what's the idea? Let's just go back for just a moment. According to Rabbi Yossi, why did Rabbi Yossi say that all these two items are muktzah and nothing else is muktzah? Because I will say, items like a large saw or the blade of the plow were never used for anything other than their intended purposes. Although the utensils could be multi-purposed, right? Could be used for different kinds of things. But a very large saw or the blade of a plow, we'll say it's not the pshat that someone says, ah, oh, you know what, it's not a clean knife. Do me a favor, pass me the blade of the plow to cut my chicken, right? To cut my piece of meat, right? No one does that. So I say, therefore, again, halacha lamaisa, these items are set aside for non-use. The list is now growing of items that were not used for anything other than their specific malacha. So, for example, specialty knives, a tanner's knife, right? A butcher's knife. These are specialty knives and would not be used for anything other than their intended purpose. Since their intended purpose, of course, is asur on Shabbos, therefore these utensils, by definition, become mukta. Tan Rabbanan, Bosei, here we go. Berishon is very exciting. Berishona, hayu omrim, shlosha kelim nitalin b'Shabbos. In the beginning, they said that there are only three utensils that you can move on Shabbos. Three utensils that are permitted for use on Shabbos. What were they? Miktsoa shel devela, the knife used to go ahead and cut a cake of pressed figs. Zuama listerin shalkedera, the ladle used to scrape off the foam from a pot. Visakin kitana shagabe shulchan, and a small knife that you would keep on the table, used for cutting food. So we'll say in the beginning, right, in the first iteration of Hilchos Muktzah, pretty much the way it started was everything is Muktzah. That's how it starts. Everything is muktzah, with the exception of three things. The knife you need to cut your cake of pressed figs, a ladle, and a small knife on your table. That's it. Everything else is muktzah. What happened? Hetiru, v'chazru v'hetiru, v'chazru v'hetiru. Then slowly began to permit more utensils, and more utensils, and more utensils. Ad she'amru, kala kelim nitalin b'shabes, chutz min ha-masra gudlo v'yaseh chalmach ha-risha. And so they came to a point where they said, actually, everything is permitted for movement on Shabbos, for use on Shabbos, except for a large saw and the blade of the plow. So I'll say, see the evolution? Hilchos Muktzah apparently began by saying everything is usser, except for three things, right? The knife to cut the cake of pressed figs, a ladle, and a small table knife. Then they permitted until everything was mutter for use on Shabbos, with the exception of a large saw and the blade of the plow. So the Gemara says, "My hetiru v'chazru v'hetiru v'chazru v'hetiru." What does that mean? They permitted more. Amar Rabbi, I will say first wide line: hetiru davar shemalachto lehetir letzorech gufo. they permitted ultimately again a davar shemalachto leheter. So we'll say now a davar shemalachto leheter means a utensil that has a totally permitted purpose. So they allowed a kli shemalachto leheter that could be moved letzorech gufo. We'll say now we're going to get into very important terms here. Tzorech gufo means for its own use, right? To use it. So for example, again, a kli shemalachto is, let's say, leheter would be a fork. Right, the fork has a primarily permitted purpose on Shabbos. So tzorech gufo means to use it as a fork. So therefore, again, they allowed a kli shemalachto leheter to be used in its primary way. V'chazu ve'etiru davar shemalachto leheter letzorech mikomo. And then afterwards, they allowed you to use a permitted utensil. They permitted you to move it because you need the space that it occupied. V'chazu ve'etiru davar shemalachto leheter letzorech gufo in letzorech mikomo lo. Then Abba said the next iteration was a kli shemalachto le'iser. Kli shemalachto le'iser is an item that has a primarily prohibited use. They permitted you to go ahead and use that item in a permitted fashion, but they did not permit you to move that item just because you need the space that it occupies. Va'dayin, and there is still, even in that iteration of the halacha, biyado achas in b'shtei yadov lo. You could only move a utensil that could be moved with one hand, but you could not move a utensil that was so large that it required two hands. Ad sha'amru, until they came along and said, until they came along and permitted Rabbi Yossi, they told you that you could even move a utensil that could only be moved with two hands. Right? Well, see, we're going to stop over here for today. I know I'm leaving off a little bit of a cliffhanger over here with Amar Rava, but Rabbi Yossi, again, we'll continue with this tomorrow, because what you're seeing over here in this Gemara, by the time we get to the end of it, which is the bottom of the daf, you're going to see the entire evolution of the process of Muktza. How we started essentially in a very restrictive place, kind of permitted, and then you're going to see Chazal pulled it back a little bit to settle in the framework of Muktza as we have it today. We'll stop over here for today. Again, davening, if those who are joining us, 7 a.m. in the shul parking lot or inside the shul, Yashkach, we'll have a great day.